of requests made to us under the optional protocol, as against a very small number of staff and the itinerant nature of our meetings, namely, this committee meets for only 3 sessions each year, there is a huge number of cases pending, and this backlog is increasing all the time. The chair gave you specific figures. I perhaps can break them down for you a bit. It changes on a daily basis, but at this point, I could say roughly at the pre-screening level, there are around 200 cases waiting to be processed. At the registration level, around 90 cases waiting to be registered. 1,285 cases currently being managed, and 402 cases are ready to be drafted for decision by the committee. But of course, the process takes some time because of the resources needed to draft. The committee is acutely conscious of this problem, and with the assistance of the petitions unit, have revised our rules of procedure to try and mitigate some of the effects of this backlog. For instance, by allowing only 2 rounds of submissions, dealing with cases under a repetitive procedure, adopting cases under the silent procedure, such as discontinuance and inadmissibility, which essentially means review and then not full consideration by the plenary, and consideration in double chambers, and most recently, joint consideration of communications that raise identical issues. So the committee, as I said, is alive to this problem and has been working and experimenting with various methodologies for reducing and ultimately eliminating the backlog. Other challenges faced by the committee include matters around the implementation of requests for implement measures, implementation of views, the increasing workload, as I said, and our outdated, archaic digital system. In view of this, let me take the opportunity to say that there are a number of ways in which states parties can assist, such as, for instance, greater cooperation in the implementation of interim measures, and in the implementation of views, supporting the Human Rights Committee and the Secretariat through JPOs, the Junior Professional Officers, which once started has proved to be extremely successful, supporting the digitalization efforts. A few states have already contributed to the petition section digitalization project. And an important element ongoing is a portal where state parties and complainants would be able to exchange comments and observations. And this would considerably address the case management backlog. And finally, enhancing the more accessible jurist database to access jurisprudence of the committee. Let me say in closing that the work under the optional protocol is perhaps one of the most meaningful aspects of our output. It holds deep resonance and meaning for individuals who may have suffered a rights violation at the domestic level and seek some form of vindication under the covenant. The legal analyses contained in our views contribute to the articulation and development of international human rights law. And in a symbiotic process of interaction and exchange with domestic jurisprudence, the contents of international human rights norms and processes is continually being refined and evolving. Let me say frankly that states parties may not always agree with our views or appreciate our findings that might reflect negatively on domestic processes. However, no state party is perfect, and violations are found in relation to all parties under the optional protocol and covenant. Sometimes violations are not intentional and are merely the effect of policies that seek to advance another agenda, usually in the public interest. Ultimately, we as the treaty monitoring body share the same goals as you, the parties to the treaty, which are to ensure that true respect for and implementation of the rights in the covenant, the quality of life and the well-being of all subjects to its jurisdiction are enhanced. For that reason, we thank you for your support and look forward to increasing cooperation in the future. Thank you very much, and I return the floor to you, Madam Chair.